And good day, my friends. Well, I feel very welcomed back, and I want to thank you all for your personal messages to me during my hiatus. I feel rested, yet I got some good work done, and now I have a few shows pre-recorded. So I hope if I can stay on track with production of new shows, you will have a show out every Thursday, barring any severe illness. Now, I didn't get as many completed shows done as I wanted. I was sick for a little bit, nothing bad. I got over it pretty quickly. But I do have a few complete shows done and then pieces of a bunch of others. So I do intend to get a show out every Thursday for you. Now, I offered today's episode as the first of my return because this is a show and topic that I've planned to do for all the 8 years I've had an Older Gay Guy Show podcast. And this being the holiday season, I know that there are many single gay men and women who are alone during this time of year, whether it be from lack of dating, to recent breakups, to those whose biological family has rejected them. I was one of these lonely souls for a few decades. I had very few Christmases with boyfriends over the years and never had a family Christmas with any of them until 2012, and that was with Paco. So I know from experience how you say to everyone that, "Oh, it doesn't matter you're alone on Christmas. You either work or you say you prefer just to have a quiet holiday catching up on reading or whatever." And even though well-meaning friends and neighbors may invite you, you feel like an extra wheel. Someone to feel sorry for. And that can be much more painful to deal with than just being alone and trying to sleep through as much of it as you can. I know because I felt it. I felt it for years. You are torn because a small part of you wants to jump at the chance to experience a Christmas with a lot of happy people. But more of you just wants to hide. It can be very emotionally draining. The following episode is not scripted, except for this introduction, and that is simply to ensure that some of the important points are mentioned before I get into the main part of this episode. Please be warned that I speak from my heart as I talk about this, and I expect that at times I'll be experiencing difficult and painful memories, and I may not always be able to keep a tight lid on my emotions as I speak. Although this subject is very serious, my personality will often inject humor as I speak of my personal experiences. I do not laugh out of disregard for the topic or for other people's feelings, but rather the absurdity of my plans at that time. This is a personal telling of one of the most difficult times of my life, and I hope that my words provoke some helpful thoughts on your part about your own existence, and maybe they could open a window slightly into what unknown pain others may feel without your knowledge of their struggles. To paraphrase Robin Williams, "Be kind to others, for you know not what silent battles they may be fighting." I had a big family Christmas with Paco's family several times now, but one Christmas stands out. One of my first Christmas celebrations with Paco's family, I did what was an important part of my Christmases alone. For decades, I had watched Days of Our Lives, an American soap opera. And every year at Christmas, the characters decorate a family tree with ornaments that have the names of present and past characters written on them. And then those that are still on the show, they would always hang their own ornaments. So I wanted to do that with Paco's family. And so I made them each a stained glass ornament with their name on them. Now, Paco's family doesn't speak a lot of English, so I had asked Paco to translate for me to them as I told them what I just told you. But I said that it was the first time I've had a family Christmas since my parents died. And once I said that sentence, I lost it. I just completely lost it. I would say a few sentences and then pause as I was overcome with sobbing. It was one of the most difficult things I've ever done, and I became very embarrassed at my behavior. Paco's sister had started to record a video of me giving out the ornaments, but I saw her lower the camera once I started crying. You have to understand that expressing emotions is not something that they easily do. When they do it, they mean it. And they ended up circling me and hugging me tightly as I tried to compose myself. But it was the very first family Christmas in 35 years, and so it was very emotional for me. So a family Christmas was far more important to me than I realized. And for all religions that celebrate holidays during this time of year, LGBTQIA+ people are often left out. And I can't bear the thought of those of you who will be alone. I am pleased to announce that Paco will be in Mexico for Christmas with his family. I will miss him terribly, but I will be home with my dogs, and it'll be just the dogs and myself for this holiday. And so I've decided that those of you who may be alone, or maybe just need an escape from family and friends for a short while, I'm going to do 3 live shows on YouTube Live on Christmas Day. I will do one at noontime, one at 4 o'clock p.m., and then one at 8 o'clock p.m. Please note that all these times are Eastern Standard Time in the United States. Eastern Standard Time, the time that's in New York, the time that's in Boston. They will be 45 minutes of a video show. I'm going to play some piano live for you. I will be asking vintage TV trivia questions, and I might throw in an erotic story time. Well, erotic for YouTube, which is far less. And I will do that because, gosh, nothing says Christmas like sweaty jocks hanging out in the sauna at their school wrestling facilities. Wrestlers. What more could we ask of Santa? I'll post more info as it nears on an Older Gay Guy Show Facebook page, and I'll mention it on the couple of podcast episodes I'm putting out before Christmas Day. So, my friends, without any further ado, let me get to this difficult show. Now, I recorded this in bits and pieces since the subject matter was so serious and so emotional to me, so you might hear differences in each segment's recording. So please do bear with that. Meanwhile, I am Joey Hernandez, and you are listening to Suicide, a Cautionary Tale, an episode of an Older Gay Guy Show podcast. Thank you for joining me.
This podcast is a proud member of the Pride 48 Podcasting Network. Check out more great shows at pride48.com.
Okay, so I'm going to try to tell this story, this first story. And, you know, usually when I'm telling stories to you, I have journals that I've kept for many years, and I refer to those stories or notes, really, that I made to myself, and I tell you the story about that. However, this particular thing, even though it was right in the middle of the time that I had started doing journaling, was not in there. I have to tell you that I haven't thought about this for a good 20 years, if not longer. And I have to tell you that in telling you this story, I am horrified that I can tell you this story. I am horrified at my behavior. And when I look at the stories in my journals, as I have the memories come back, I focus in my mind the story and how I'm going to tell it to you. When I tried to put myself back in the frame of mind I was in at this time, I could not do it. I tried. I could not do it. I think perhaps now, in the long run, that may be a really good thing that I can't get those feelings back to tell you the story. So I'm just going to do the best I can in telling you what happened. This was probably 2 or 3 years after my mother passed. I'm trying to remember. I think so. I had been engaged to my girlfriend. Then we broke up. But I lived with her for a period of time after we broke up and after I came back from Cape Cod the first time, when I was down there about 6 months. And enough years had passed that I was self-medicating with alcohol a lot. It was a very messed up period of my life. And the grief that I had over losing my parents and being on my own and not having been taught anything about how to take care of myself, I just would have a couple drinks, 2 or 3 drinks, when I got home every single night to kind of numb my feelings. And I decided one day that I just wanted it over with. I just wanted to be with my parents again. And I just couldn't take the pain of what life was at that time. Now, I will tell you many reasons later of why I should have or could have done something about my frame of mind rather than what happened. This was before I was in therapy for very much. And I told my ex-girlfriend / roommate that I just couldn't do it anymore. I told her everything. She knew what I went through as my parents died, not my father, but my mother. And she knew me really well. And I asked her to help me do it, which is a horrible thing. You don't ever ask anybody to do this ever. But I did. And she agreed. Maybe she thought she was humoring me or I wouldn't go through with it or something. But she agreed to help me. Even though I had been drinking quite a bit that night, I was not very easy to get along with when I had a few drinks. So bless her heart for, I guess, trying to take care of me. So I, of course, wanted to do it in a very dramatic way, which is another point I want to talk about later. But in this very dramatic way, I decided that I was going to buy sleeping pills because back at this time in the late 70s, you could buy over-the-counter sleeping pills that would contain things that are not allowed now. And one of the big brands of over-the-counter sleeping aids were Somanex. I have no idea if that's still around. But prior to me doing this, I had heard about people that had killed themselves taking a lot of this sleeping aid. And so I decided that's the way I was going to do it. However, It was a warm, full moon kind of night, lots of light. And I wanted to go up to my parents' graves, and I wanted to lay down next to where they were, and I wanted to die there. Oh, so dramatic. Partially dramatic, but honestly, I was just crawling to get as close to my parents as I could. And I was concentrating on that. My belief was I would be with them if I killed myself. So I went to... I cannot believe this. I went into a convenience store, which had Somanex. I got 3 bottles of it. Meanwhile, I had been drinking. I was kind of slurring. I had been crying, so my eyes were all red, and there were probably streaks on my cheeks. And I took 3 bottles of sleeping pills and paid for them at the cashier. And I don't remember if it was a guy or a girl cashier, but they didn't care. I mean, in today's world, you know, people are always looking at things and filming things and all kinds of stuff. And I think some sort of emergency thing would have been done. But back then it wasn't. So I went back to her apartment and I promptly downed 1 bottle of this sleeping aid. And then I waited a while and then I had half of the second bottle. Once they were in me, I asked her to drive me up to where my parents were. She could keep my car that she'll be driving. And she actually drove me up to the cemetery. But it's quite a big deal, this cemetery. It's a memorial park, so there are no gravestones. There are just plaques in the ground. So it's beautiful to look at it. Flowers and fountains and just flowering trees, cherry blossoms, apple blossoms. It's gorgeous because there's no gravestones, you know, taking your view. I very much looked forward to being buried there because my 2 parents were there in 1 grave, and in the second grave, it was available for whichever child wanted to use it. A perhaps interesting fact is just about maybe 4 months ago, I got those graves in my name and Paco as the other person. And I'm so glad that that was done. But back then, I just assumed, of course, I'm the youngest one. When I die, they're going to bury me. So in order to get into this big park, because there were gates and all this shit, there's a little turnout on the road that it's on, which is this pretty small road. And we parked there and we hiked a little bit through some woods and we went around this gate that was there so cars could not drive in there. And we got into the memorial park. And it was lit again. There was all this moonlight. It was very, very bright. Wow. Yeah. And so we started walking and I'm going to my parents' grave. And I told her, you know, you can just go and I will, you know, take care of everything myself. You won't have to deal with that. And she was, no, I want to go with you to the grave and I'll leave. I'll leave before you die. I'm like, okay. So we walk over to my parents' grave. And as we parked the car, I took the other half of bottle number 2 of the sleeping pills. I had a small amount of food to keep my stomach settled, but I was getting a little queasy at that point. And I'm starting to slow down and stagger a little bit because I've taken 2 bottles of this sleeping aid. So we're at my parents' grave and I lay down like you do in a coffin. You have to remember, at that point, I had already become a funeral director in Embalmer. So I told her she could go, and she's like, well, let me just stay for a few more minutes, maybe until you fall asleep. And I'm okay. And I said, and I'm going to fall asleep first, and then I will naturally, probably my heart will stop. So you don't have to be concerned about it. I'm not going to feel it. Probably. I wouldn't. I don't know. And after a few minutes of me being there, she got up and said, okay, she was going to go. And I thanked her so much for driving me there, doing so much for me in the years I had known her, and thanking her for doing such a selfless thing, bringing me to my parents' grave so I can die. So she went off, and I'm sitting there, laying down, sitting back up. I should have brought it, well, we didn't have, I was going to say I should have brought a radio. I guess I could have brought a transistor radio. And anyway, I would probably be discovered, and I don't want that. So after a while, I lay down. I'm kind of sleepy, but I can feel my heart is racing, and I'm trying to go to sleep, and I'm trying to go to sleep, and I could not. And I'm like, well, I guess I'm doing the third bottle of pills. And I had not had foresight to bring some sort of beverage with me that I could take the pills with. So I got up and I started walking around. And not too far from my parents' grave is this fountain. The fountain was off. I guess maybe at night they shut them off. And I looked at the water, and it was all this murky water, kind of blackish. Dead leaves was just all through it. And it was just like rotting water, like that green-colored, slimy water. And I thought, well, I want to die. So it's not like this fountain is going to be like horrible and poison for me and oh my... It'll just help, if anything. So I actually took an entire bottle of sleeping pills while cupping my hands and drinking shut off, kind of old fountain water. It tasted awful, of course. It's this bacteria-filled fountain water. So I got the third bottle down. And I went back and I laid down on the grave again. And I'm kind of sleepy, but I don't really feel like I'm going to drop off and go to sleep and die. I just don't feel like that's going to happen. Meanwhile, my heart is boom, 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 boom in me. So my ex-fiance comes back to the grave. She was gone maybe a half hour, 45 minutes. And I'm like, you're still here? And she's like, yeah, I just wanted to check on you and see how you were doing. And I said, well, I told her about me taking the fountain water. And she's like, oh. And now I'm like, I just don't feel like I'm going to sleep. I'm tired, but I can't sleep. I think I'm worried because I took them, all these pills. So I said, well, maybe I'll do research and try again another day. So it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I said to her, why don't we just go back and go home? And we did. And when I get back to her apartment, I sit down on the couch. She went to make coffee to have it available for the morning. And I fell asleep. And I slept for... well, I had a little bit of consciousness in between, but I slept for close to 24 hours, and I could just feel my heart racing. Well, come to find out later, because we didn't have computers or anything to look something up, but Somanex took out whatever it was that killed you. So no matter how many of them you took, you were not going to die. What you could potentially do is get your heartbeat into like tachycardia. You could have a heart attack, certainly. That just wasn't happening to me. So I slept, and a couple days later, gosh, I'm so glad I didn't kill myself the other night. I'd like to share a few quotes that I truly believe in as we move into the second story time. Trust that there is always movement happening in your life, even when everything seems stagnant. You could be feeling like things aren't changing, that your problems are too overwhelming to climb out of, that life isn't being fair or making sense. But you must trust that even though it feels this way, there's always something happening behind the scenes, because time doesn't freeze. Every day as you wake up, you're approaching the end of this chapter and the beginning of a new one. Have hope that you're not always going to be where you are and that things will change in time. And you have to stop thinking you'll be stuck in your situation forever. We feel like our heart will never heal or that we'll never get out of this impossible struggle. Don't confuse a season for a lifetime. Even your trials have an expiration date. This next story time is my last official planning of suicide. I certainly did continue to think about it over the years, but I never seriously thought of doing it unless one of my illnesses becomes unbearable. But I don't see that happening. I want to stress the dramatic in me. I was a funeral director, and I knew how to do things right to make it easier once they found my body. But a thought came into my brain, something that I realized I had thought a lot about during my dying plan in this story. And I'm going to tell you about that realization that I had after this second story. And with that said, I tell you another tale. Okay, so I'm recording this on yet another day, and I'm doing this just because, again, these things are kind of hard to pull up from my memories and to talk about. So my second and last, I won't even say suicide attempt, because I'll just say like suicide planning, because as you'll see, it didn't get as far. So this is about maybe 3 or 4 years later. I was living back on Cape Cod again in the funeral home that I worked for. And I had been through a few relationships during attempt number one and planning number two. And none of them worked out. All of them were my usual 8-month relationships or so. And there was always a lot of yelling, a lot of threats on my part. Because I drank so much, I was certainly always drunk while we were breaking up. Thank God that period of my life is not here anymore. But I was working for the funeral home, and I decided, you know, at some point I just couldn't take it anymore. So I planned I was going to kill myself, and I wasn't quite sure exactly how I could do it, because obviously getting pills like from a drugstore or something is not going to do anything. And I don't know any way to get prescriptions for the good stuff. And I thought about the various different kinds of ways to kill yourself. I knew someone that hung himself. That didn't seem so great. But, you know, I didn't want it to be painful. I really had looked forward to the pills working just because I would go to sleep, I thought, and my heart would stop while I was sleeping. And so I was saying to myself, gee, you know, I wish I could just go to sleep. And then, I mean, coincidence, kismet, I saw a movie about someone that killed themselves by having the car in the garage and putting a hose to the exhaust pipe of the car and running a hose into the window and just kind of coughing somewhat, falling asleep or passing out or whatever you would do. And then that would be it. And so I thought, well, I could do that. I mean, let's face it. I mean, if I wanted to kill myself dramatically, I think, you know, it'll hit the national news, you know. Funeral director kills himself in hearse in garage. I mean, I could just see the headlines. So I thought I would do that. But then I thought, you know what? The owner's house is right next door. If he's hearing the car run for a long time, then he's going to come check it out, and he would probably come and check it out before I was dead or couldn't be saved. So I figured what I'll do is I'll drive the hearse up into that little cemetery that's so quiet and up, just up the road from us, a little cemetery on a dead-end road. That's all that's there is a cemetery. Nobody goes in it at night. This is before kids would hang out getting drunk in cemeteries and drug addicts and shit. And so, okay, I thought, well, great. Okay, the headline has expanded. Funeral director kills himself in the hearse in the cemetery. Okay, that's a good headline. So I just figured, you know, that's what I'd do. And I had a Sunday that I was off, and the owner was off with his family, and nothing was going on at the funeral home. And so I had been grieving some stupid relationship I must have been in at the time. And I thought, okay, well, here's my opportunity. But it was a Sunday. So I checked, and whenever I had any alcohol in the house, it would not last because I would drink it. I would always say I was going to stock a bar so I could have people over, and I never got to any kind of second bottle of something because I would drink the first as soon as I got it. So I didn't have much alcohol, and I thought to myself, I don't feel like wanting to kill myself. I need to kind of be drunker and listen to music and be sad and be crying, and then I'll kill myself because that will all fall in. But I drank what alcohol I had, and you could not get alcohol in stores on a Sunday. There weren't, beer and wine wasn't even carried in supermarkets yet. So it was just liquor stores, and they were all closed on Sunday. The only other thing you could do is to go to a bar and get drinks. And well, you know, I don't want to get myself looking good or something and drive to the gay bar in the afternoon and see maybe one or two people there and going all that way and then have to drive all the way back having had a few drinks. So I decided I was going to go to this kind of divey place that I knew was about 2 miles from the funeral home where I was living. And they were open. It was afternoon. I called and checked. And I figured, okay, I'll go there and I'll have a bunch of drinks and then I'll have the balls to go through with this. So it's about 1:30 in the afternoon and I head down to this bar and I go inside and, you know, it had been a bright sunny day outside. I walk inside to this dark bar, you know, with just kind of red candles on the tables, and my eyes adjusted to the dark, and there was a woman, middle-aged woman, kind of gray hair, smoking a cigarette, drinking a drink at the bar, and a guy sitting next to her, somewhere around the same age, work clothes. The bartender kind of also looked like he fit into this little trio, and there was nobody else in the place. There was no music playing, there was nothing. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to be picky because I'm going to kill myself, you see, in a couple hours. So why should I be choosy about where I'm getting the balls to do it? So I order a drink. I ordered a whiskey and ginger, and I got it. And I remember it being really weak, a weak drink. And so I go and sit at one of the in the little cocktail tables, because the bar was one of those kind of cheap kind of bars. only maybe like four people could sit there, and the two of them were already there, and the three of them were talking amongst themselves. So I go and sit at a little cocktail table, and I'm drinking my drink, and gosh, it was all ice and all ginger ale and like a of whiskey. I mean, you couldn't even detect it practically. But again, I want to get going with this. I just want to get the liquor in me. So I down that first drink in probably 2 or 3 minutes. I go up to the bar again, and I order a whiskey and water this time, thinking, well, maybe then they'll, because of the way it's made, maybe they'll put more alcohol in. I don't know. So I get my drink, and I go back to my cocktail table, and I'm sipping on it, and just as weak, just horrible. But I had paid, you know, like, I think they were probably $4 or something each back then. So I finished that drink, and I went and got back in my car, and I was thinking, well, I could go to another bar. But, you know, back then, I didn't really have a lot of money at any given time. I wasn't earning anything. My take-home was $88 a week. So I just figured, okay, well, once the drinks set into me, then I will have the nerve to do this. Again, I keep trying to talk myself into it. So I get back to my place, and I start thinking about the going in the hearse up to the cemetery. And it occurred to me, oh, I need a hose. I didn't even think about that. Something that would fit over the exhaust pipe and be long enough to come into the side back window of the hearse. And so I thought, well, I'll get a vacuum cleaner hose. Back then, vacuum cleaner hoses were not attached permanently in any way to the vacuum like a lot of the time they are now. You could undo both ends of the hose. You could take it off and use it for something else if you had a use, which I did. But when I, you know, I went to check it, it was like 1/3 of the distance of the hose that I need, the length of hose that I need. So I went in search of other vacuum cleaners I knew we had in the place. I ended up getting 3 of these hoses. Meanwhile, now it's been like 45 minutes to an hour since I've been back from this bar, still waiting for the drinks to do something to me. So I get 3 of the hoses, and then I realize I have to find a way to attach them all together. So I go and get some duct tape, and I start duct taping a seal so they were sealed together. That's like another half hour to track down the tape and get it all set and get it all done. And I'm still waiting for it to feel, for me to feel something, and no, nothing. So after a while, I was like, well, I guess I'll do it tomorrow. I'll work this out better and do it tomorrow. So I undid the duct tape on the hoses just in case. I didn't go through with it the next day, although I was determined I was going to. And then come the next day, I just didn't feel like killing myself. Funny how that works. It was the next day. It was just the very next day. And I was happy I hadn't. That always stays with me. I think about that a lot. I'm recording this section on my final day of recording for this episode. So, folks, here is what my realization was. And I need to really stress that this is my reasoning, my own personal philosophy of what I was doing, of what I was thinking. It may or may not be true for you. And I'll tell you, this realization came very hard. It was difficult to accept in myself, but it really made all the difference. You know, sometimes they'll say that people will attempt suicide or talk about attempting suicide just to get attention. Well, that wasn't the case with mine, but there was something that perhaps was even worse. And that is, when I was planning these things, both when I was going to go to my parents' grave and die, and when I was going to be in the cemetery in the hearse and die. During that time that I was preparing for it, in an endless loop in my mind, was me imagining my funeral, the wake specifically, and all the people that I felt had done me wrong, whether it be break up with me or dismiss me in any way. I wanted them to feel guilty that I was dead. And I always thought that, and I didn't see anything wrong with thinking about that. After all, I'm rather melodramatic in the way that I approach things. But wanting to make others feel sorry that they weren't nicer to you is not a reason to kill yourself. And that's basically what I was doing. I mean, yes, it was painful to be in this world, having lost my parents, with drinking as much as I do, various things like that. But I could survive, and there were even good times. So no, it wasn't that. It was when I got to a certain point and I felt rejected, like I was never going to meet someone that I could spend the rest of my life with, because that was what my number one goal was back then. And so imagining how sorry everyone's going to be that I'm gone, it's almost like I wish I could kill myself, have everybody be all sorry and crying at my wake, that I would somehow be able to observe that. And then in a year or so, pop back up like, I survived. Because I didn't want to forever be dead. Not really. Sometimes I convinced myself I felt that way, but no, that's not what it was. And gosh, I can't kill myself because I want a bunch of people to feel sad and cry for me. It was just so ridiculous. You know, I just, obviously my parents dying was some sort of PTSD for me, I guess. And drinking, of course, can make you feel sad and depressed, and you know, it's a depressant, right? So that was a difficult time of my life, very difficult, the most difficult, I think. And that was before any illness. But now that I'm in a clearer mind, and thank God I was, by the time I was like 22 or so, I really didn't plan on it ever. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, wouldn't it be awful if there was a heaven or a purgatory or one of those kind of things where you go and you see the movie of your life? And what if I was shown that movie of my life, but it went beyond what my death was? Beyond to a regular lifespan and what my life would be, because I wouldn't have had my pets, my cats, that meant the world to me. I wouldn't have missed their love for anything, but I would have missed that. I would have missed my husband, Paco, this wonderful, loving, kind, beautiful man that, despite how broken I have been, wanted me and still loves me. I would have missed that. Fortunately for me, and I think for many people, the right medication and therapy will take these feelings of wanting to end your life away for a lot of people. Now, no, it doesn't work all the time and for everyone. But for many, I'm tempted to say most, a medication with therapy saves their lives. And I was with Paco when they discovered what meds I should be on. So I was with Paco maybe 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, I'm not sure, something like that. And I was untreated bipolar, bouncing up and down and being very, very, very difficult to live with, especially when I got depressed, which was quite often. So if you're feeling anything like what I've described in this podcast today, I urge you to try to find the right medication and the right therapist and give that a good try. Now, the fact of the matter is most times when I speak to someone like this about this, they'll say, oh, I tried therapy. Oh, it was a nightmare. I hated it. And my psychiatrist put me on this medication that made me feel like a zombie. Okay, you know what? That wasn't the right medication and that wasn't the right therapist. I took a long time before I found the right one. And then the right one moved on and I had to find another one. And this one is great too. And I have to tell you, it makes all the difference in the world when you have a relationship with a therapist and you can go and talk about the most personal, most delicate, most embarrassing stuff that goes on in your life. How they can be like a lighthouse beam through the fog. So if you haven't tried it, but you feel depressed and suicidal thoughts, are you hesitant to try it for some reason? Here's the thing. I know it is difficult, but I believe that we were all born perfect the way we are. I believe that we're born good people. And the fact of the matter is, you nor I are broken. We're not damaged. And I thought that way for a long time. We're not broken. We're temporarily out of order for a short time, maybe. But the fact of the matter is, people do care. And if you don't have those people in your life, you need to find them. And how you find them, there's many ways, but they all require you to leave your house, to get out and do something, to take a chance, whether that be going to bars, dance clubs, meetup events. Usually all the major cities have all kinds of community-based programs, activities, a lot of people that get together and support each other and help each other get through difficult times. You need to get out, even if that means forcing yourself to go out amongst people. It is safer for you to be out with people sometimes than to be alone, and it might help break the depression. Sometimes, and I was this way for a while, sometimes you don't want the depression to go away. As bizarre as that sounds, you are comfortable. You know what it is. There's no surprises or accidents that happen that interrupt. You know what you feel when you're depressed. You get in bed, pull the covers over your head. With being bipolar, when I wasn't being treated for it, I was used to my bouncing up and down. Some days beyond happy and excited and energized to take on the world. and then it would shift the other way, and I would get depressed and go to bed and not talk to people or engage. Once I started being treated and they found the right medication for me, that bouncing really high and really low stopped. Now, certainly, I do go up a little bit. I have my happier days. Certainly, there are days that don't go well, and therefore, I'm worried or slightly depressed. And one of the things that happen with bipolar people when they get on medication is they're quite glad that the depression is gone. But a lot of times we miss the highs. We miss that energy, that just total sure of yourself, completely confident in everything that you're doing. You feel like you belong. You feel like you are in many ways better than the majority of people. And sometimes you miss that just because it was so happy and enjoyable. So sometimes bipolar people don't want to get onto medication or do therapy because they don't want to lose that. I hope, though, that if you are lonely during this season, that my words may have given you a few things to think about. I hope sharing such intimate details of what was the darkest times of my life, that may help someone. It's embarrassing to tell you these stories, but in some ways they're just so ridiculous and funny. And if somebody can feel better by hearing my stupid stories, gosh, I really hope that would help someone. So, the next show is for your entertainment. Or should I say, maybe better, that it's for your entertaining. It's an episode that is only going to have piano music. Most of it will be Christmas music. This next episode is my Christmas show, part one. There will be no words, no usual intro or outro. It will simply be music. And I will release that next Thursday, December 14th. Meanwhile, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It was one of my more difficult shows to do. Until next time, my friends, this is Joey Hernandez. Thank you so very much for joining me today. Bye for now.